The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Hello, welcome to a brand new best podcast in baseball, the last BPIB from Cardinals Spring Training 2025. I'm going to be joined by Jeff Gordon back in St. Louis, and we're going to talk about the crux of the... Oh, shoot. All right. No, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this again. Oh, man, I was so good the first time. All right. All right. 3, 2, 1. Welcome to a brand new best podcast in baseball, the last of the best podcasts in baseball from St. Louis Cardinals Spring Training 2025 here in Jupiter, Florida. I'll be joined this week by Jeff Gordon back in St. Louis, and we're going to talk about whether or not it's important to sit in St. Louis or play in Memphis. That's the crux of the questions facing the Cardinals as they crystallize their roster before heading to Memphis for the final exhibition game and then bouncing up to St. Louis to open the regular season against the Minnesota Twins at Busch Stadium. Jeff, I'm really eager to talk about it. Cue the music.
The best fans in baseball deserve the best podcast in baseball. It's BPIB. Here's your host, Derek Gould.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com instant offense columnist, your author of the daily tip sheet there at STLtoday.com. It is, of course, Jeff Gordon. Gordo, give me, as the kids say, a vibe check. Tell me what it's like in St. Louis as their beloved Redbirds begin to flock home for the 2025 regular season. Is there a whole lot of excitement? Are we going to see a sea of red canvas, you know, blanketing downtown? Everybody's really geeked up about this season.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Downtown's not a very exciting place these days, but the weather's been great. Spring's here, a little bit of a cold snap overnight, but it's warming up again, and people are excited about baseball. And hey, our Heroes just played a really nice game on TV. Everybody got, you know, that was uplifting for sure. And, you know, I wouldn't say this is anything like what we saw back in the previous decade when the team was in the chase every year, but at least for the moment, there's some hope. Maybe it's not eternal, but you know, at least for the next week or two,
they are trending towards a sellout for opening day. There were some tickets remaining, but they feel like they're set to have a sellout for opening day. They're not sure obviously what that means for the season ahead. A strong start to the season means a lot. There's a big belief within the Cardinals organization that how they play, how they look, how they do in the opening weeks of the season has a downstream effect for ticket sales later in the season. And if they start off chilly, then they can expect a chilly reception to them later in the season as people make different plans for their vacations, different plans for their weekends, different plans for their entertainment dollar. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, there is obviously the fact that the Savannah Bananas might be the biggest draw this year at Busch Stadium, and they understand that. But they want a packed house, and it looks like they're going to get it for opening day. Not to say that there wasn't a question that they would did it, but they are going to pull that off. So at least that'll be good. It's a good start, and we'll see. You know, it is obviously, as you have talked about, Gordo, or you and I have both talked about, it's hard sometimes to see the signal through all the noise, right? You know, an example of that is down here at spring training. I mean, obviously, if you look on your phone and look on social media, there's not a whole lot of fondness for the Cardinals front office at the moment. But if you look in the stands, people are walking up and asking for John Mozeliak's autographed. So how do you, you know, balance that? You know, where is the real pulse of the fans? What have you seen from spring training to give you some kind of direction one way or the other, both positive and negative about this team?
Well, you see some of the usual suspects, especially Lars Nubar playing well. You know, watching him just about the most recent game, just everything looks good, man. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the idea of him in a leadoff spot. He's selective, yet he knows there are times where he needs to be aggressive. But his ability to work the count, the potential for him to fill that spot and allow other guys to work more effectively elsewhere in the batting order, because Mason Wynn bit more effective lower in the order, is, you know, statistically, than he was at the top of the order. So there's a, you know, I think there's some encouraging things. I liked what Mason Wynn was trying to do, you know, add more power, add better base dealing this season. I know it hasn't been, you know, injury and production issues have, you know, kept maybe that from happening. But, you know, so I think I still have belief in the young core of veterans, with the exception of still wanting to see what, you know, Jordan Walker does and if Nolan Gorman gets on track. But beyond that, you know, Ivan Herrera can hit. You know what you have in Brendan Donovan. You know Wynn's a stud. You know Burleson can hit. You go down the list, you've got a lot of, you got a lot of parts to work with. And, you know, the top of your pitching rotation with Sonny Gray and the top of your bullpen, Ryan Helsley, in good shape. Although, you know, Gray would like to forget about some of the actual performance in the spring. But you trust Sonny Gray.
Do you get the sense that it's a little bit like, the, you know, the birds can't change their feather? You know, they talk about this reset. It became a transition. All the words that they want to throw around, but in the end, their actions continue to say, you know, maybe there's a chance to compete in this. Like, just as you outlined it, you know, there's not a whole lot of new, fresh youth in that equation. There's a whole lot of folks that the Cardinals have seen before, that Cardinal fans have seen before. And there's a whole lot of, like, well, veterans in the rotation. There's a whole lot of, like, they added Phil Maton, who, you know, is a veteran for the bullpen. You know, it just seems like as much as they talk about wanting to change and create opportunity, some of the young players who have been some of the most impressive players of spring, Victor Scott II, Michael McGreevy, Matthew Liberatore, you know, those opportunities that were advertised in October, they might not be there in March because the Cardinals just can't stop being the Cardinals and the NL Central refuses to stop being the NL Central.
Yeah, the Cardinals are stuck with Nolan Arenado. Now, being stuck with a guy who could be in the Hall of Fame someday, not the worst thing in the world. And for fans who are complaining that they didn't move enough of their talent and make a larger fire sale, well, that's just such an incongruous position for Cardinal fans to take compared to the usual expectation of this team's not trying hard enough to win. It's just the old argument, the big complaint before with this fan base was, well, they just want to get in the playoffs and, you know, they'd just be good enough just to get in. Of course, that gave way to what happened the last 2 years. And then the complaint seemed to be like, well, they didn't blow the team up enough. Well, so
to me, I like the way you put that, though, Jeff. Like, they didn't do enough to win / to 2025. They didn't do enough to lose.
Yeah, yeah. They should be trying harder to bail. And it's like, and it is hard. You know, John Mozeliak's been in that position forever, man. You think it's easy for him to just like, okay, we're not going to try at all this year. And my swan song, we're just going to completely and, you know, it may be that as the season goes along, they start taking more drastic action. But, yeah, it is hard. It is hard for the Cardinals just to take a whole other way. It's just, you know, Bill DeWitt and his ownership, it's unthinkable to just go that route. And he's always wanted to avoid that. And so they did so far. But, you know, next week, the Yankees might acquire Nolan Arenado and more serious things happen.
Yeah, that's something that's in play, right? Obviously, is, you know, if a player gets off to a strong start and a team does not, in this case, say Nolan Arenado gets off to a robust start, but the team around him leaks leads in the sixth or seventh inning, the rotation starts to sputter a little bit. And despite his best efforts and his performance, the Cardinals are out of it quickly and not looking like they're going to be in it at all. Then you could start seeing some movement there. I guess the real question becomes then in June, you have this very hospitable division where there really isn't a Titan. You know, like the Cubs kind of want to be, but, you know, they did reduce payroll too. You know, and they have 1 year Kyle Tucker. I wrote for our special section that I can't imagine more pressure on a team in the NL Central to win right now than there is on the Cubs, followed shortly by the Reds probably before Ellie De La Cruz goes off and gets a $1 billion contract. So you have this, like, but this intense pressure on the Cubs, and yet they kind of pulled the Cardinals, right? They stopped shy of going all in. Some of that was not by their choice. Alex Bregman was there, but they didn't outbid the Red Sox. It looks like they didn't outbid the Tigers for him. So really, what kind of team did they expect to be? And do they just kind of get along like the Cardinals, like Cardinal fans thought of the Cardinals, just kind of get by? So what happens then, right? What if there's this like log jam pileup, whatever you want to call it, around Flag Day, Jeff. And Cardinals are neither in it nor out of it. And they have these assets like Ryan Helsley and Eric Fetty and Miles Michaelis and Steven Matz, all on short-term deals. And they got a new front office coming in. I mean, how do they convince themselves to pull away from it? Or do they kind of linger and loiter and wonder and end up, you know, idling all season?
Yeah, that's a challenge there, because because of all the things you outlined, there's a real good chance this team will cling to mathematical life for some time, right? It won't be, they may not be a vibrant team this year. They may not be an exciting contender, but they could have mathematical life. And will they do what the yesteryear White Sox did when they're just, you know, really very close to a chase and you said, well, yeah, but we can't win it all, so let's go ahead and start moving guys. It's going to be hard for the Cardinals to do that. And that begs the question, Derek, at that time, who makes that decision? Because you've got a lame duck president of baseball operations and his replacement who's eyeing the future. And he sees some of the offers that are coming in for some of the players you mentioned. And he starts getting excited about what 2026 could look like and what he could do to the overall system with these assets that are being offered. But the guy in the chair may not want to go out in that fashion. So who makes the call then, Derek?
Yeah, actually, I know the answer to that. The final call, according to ownership and Mozeliak, is his. But when it comes to anything involving the future, he and Haim will work to make that decision together, especially if it's to, you know, acquire players that will be under Haim Bloom's watch, not Mozeliak. That is how they, and, you know, I talked to Mozeliak about this, and he said, you know, they talk constantly, they meet specifically, and that will likely ratchet up as they get into that middle of the season and start looking at, like, all right, what does a trade room look like? They'll bring all the folks together, and I get the sense, obviously, too, that will involve even, like, some of the new voices, some of the new hires, like a Rob Serfolio. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's involved in that. And you know, you've had Randy Flores involved and Moises Rodriguez involved in that in the past as well. So I think, you know, as those deals start to come together and they start talking about the directions they could go, anything that has some sort of impact on the 2026 and beyond is going to involve Bloom. And Mozeliak has said that as much. His goal is he wants to create, he said, as much roster flexibility as possible, which, in, you know, is part of why you're not, say, you know, what do they have, hours left of this spring training, and there's not been the annual, you know, extension. There's not been that look to move a guy and lock him down for years to come. There's not been even that discussion of it. That's going to be a call that, you know, for the out years, that's going to be Bloom's to make.
Well, and one thing I look at this team, you know, we've talked a lot about the guys who are trying to push to get their first full exposure in the big leagues, and the guys with tremendous upside, and you've mentioned them, but you do have one more year to find some guys. I think you have Mason Wynn defined pretty well, but boy, you're trying to define Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker, of course, and still trying to define Lars Nootbaar. Because is he healthy? Does he meet his offensive potential? Can he play center field? If he can do all of that, he's a much more valuable player. And now he's a long-term asset if you choose to make him that. So I think this is such a test for so many guys to determine where they are with the franchise going forward. And that's part of the thing. That's part of what Haim's watching as well as Mo.
Yeah, that's one of the big questions, right? I mean, the notion that the Cardinals have said over and over again is the one thing they cannot leave this season without is clarity on where all these players fit into their future. You would think that the worst case scenario is that some of these guys don't perform, right? They don't meet their potential. They don't meet the team's expectations. You know, they don't become the players they were drafted to be, developed to be, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the case. I mean, in some ways that gives the Cardinals clarity, right, to move on from somebody. What they don't want is some where they are right now, this nebulous notion of who is the future of their lineup. Where does Jordan Walker fit into the next 8 years of Cardinals baseball? Where does Nolan Gorman fit into the next 5 years of Cardinal baseball? You know, is Mason Wynn their long-term shortstop and J.J. Weatherholt going to join him, say, in the middle of the infield there? Or do they need to look at different directions to go? Who are the starters that they're going to build around? One of the things that they talk about, Gordo, is leaving this year with clarity on who they're going to have for the years to come so that they know where to spend money to augment. That's their promise. And that's what fans should probably key on, is this notion that, like, look, they scaled back. They dropped a lot of payroll this year. You know, I spoke to Mozeliak again for our special section, and he said that's, quote unquote, not a permanent approach. What they want to do is, you know, obviously get their revenue streams going, get them back in place with TV, ticket sales, all that stuff, right? Also look to the new model, because there's going to be a new CBA coming. But as you define coming out of 2025, who your core unit is, akin to, if you want to go back 12 years, who the group is that's the Alan Craig, the John Jays, the David Freezes, you know, the Michael Walkas, who it was there for 6 years, or who the Adam Wainwright, Yadier Molina, Albert Pujols is of this era. Not to say that same production, but who are holding down the cornerstones of the roster, and then spend to augment. The worst outcome, they suggest, isn't a lack of production from some of these guys. It's a further lack of clarity from their roster as a whole.
Yeah, it's a mix of guys at different points in their careers. You know, some guys who are running out of time to prove that their apparent upside can be met, and some guys that are just scratching the surface. You start talking about some of the younger guys. So the different points, some guys you have a pretty good handle. You know what you got with Brendan Donovan, I think. You don't really know what you have with Jordan Walker. You hope you have something, but you don't know. So there's a range there. And then, of course, going down to Weatherholt, very exciting potential. And I think maybe even September we get a bit of a look at him. So, yeah, and I think they can get there. And the challenge is, you know, you're starting the year with one group, and the group is probably going to evolve to some degree during the course of the season. And you want to put guys in a position to succeed, but you want to give them a good run too. So the question I have for you, Derek, is let's say Jordan Walker being a good example. You want him to succeed. Now, does that mean he gets 600 plate appearances, or does that mean you have to shelter his usage against tough right-handers and try to make sure that he builds momentum and confidence and makes progress before he really becomes a true everyday guy? Can you hybrid him and Nolan Gorman as well? Because you need him to be a guy that has confidence at the plate and who develops. It's not just about 600 plate appearances. It's about having a productive year. Those can be two different things, Derek.
Super great point. This is actually something that I had a conversation with Oliver Marmol about, and that, you know, he made the point that, you know, he and I, this goes back, right, several years. He and I were actually not too far from here, I guess 80 miles from here, down in Miami. We're in the office there at the Visitors Clubhouse, and I asked him about the cost of impatience and this notion that I had, you know, this like theory that, like, the Cardinals, because they always had, you know, both in action, but also sometimes to the frustration of the fan base, I'm sure, in statement, had their thumb on the scale of win now. And that's been going for a while. But that led to some impatient decisions that, say, the Brewers didn't have, because they didn't feel that same pressure. They had some times where they could grow now or get the right move now. And they have that kind of either culture or brand management or whatever you want to say, but there was a real pressure to win now. And so that's why you didn't get a whole lot of Randy Arozarena in the major leagues. That's why you didn't get a whole lot of Adolis Garcia. Injury is why you didn't get a whole lot of Lane Thomas. But there are example after example of, you know, prospects who just didn't get the long look at with the Cardinals or a lot of playing time. And they obviously want to correct that. They want to, you know, as Mosaic said, they want to see what they have and not see what they have in other uniforms. But the point that that Marmol made in a recent conversation I had with him is that, like, when they talk about runway, that is not a synonym, Jeff, for patience. He said at times development requires impatience, and it is exactly what you're describing there. At what point in time do you not let a guy play his way into a crater? and instead say, look, you got to step back, not be in the game for a little bit, maybe not face that tough right-hander as you're talking about, or maybe not face this team, or maybe spend a week away where your outcomes are not showing up in the standings. They're not showing up on your baseball card, and find your swing that way. He said, that's going to be a real delicate thing. He goes, so when the team talks about runway, he goes, that's not like carte blanche patience to go out and play your way through whatever happens. He goes, it's going to take the staff to recognize when, no, this isn't going in the right direction. We have to choose something else. And that is very much part of development. And I thought that was an interesting point. Our colleague Lynn Worthy for the special section spent some time also looking at decisions that the manager might make during games. We've seen this a little bit, Jeff. You might recall a few moments. Tony La Russa, we can go way back, would talk about this, the notion of, I got to get this young guy, or I got to get this new guy, or I got to get this player, this at bat in May, so that I know if I can, so I know if I can count on him for this at bat in September. He's got to get this experience now. I might have a better matchup for player X against fire-breathing closer Y, but I need this guy to experience this now. And if it comes through, great, all the benefit, but he's got to know what's ahead of him so that we can use him in September. We're going to see some choices like that. Like, it might be, hey, this is a tough lefty, and you look at the lineup and go, man, Alec Burleson is in this lineup against that tough lefty. But that's because they're going to make a choice there about sometimes the matchup, maybe what does he make of it, not how to win with it.
Yeah, just think about the bullpen, Derek. You know, you've got some guys who are trying to prove that they can do some things. All right, so Roycroft, Fernandez, mm-hmm. I mean, do I leave him in for this guy and see if he's up, you know, and see what happens, see how he handles it, see if he bounces back from that jump. Yeah. The guy gives up a bleeder. Now he's got a tough batter coming in here, and things are starting to snowball, and not totally his fault. What kind of resolve does he have with this at bat? Is he gonna have confidence in himself to go get this done or not? You know, so yeah. So what a balance. You don't want guys going into veering off the road and getting into a place where they have a hard time getting back on the road. We saw that with Gorman and Walker last year. At the same time, you got to challenge them. You got to find out what you have. So, and not just for this season too. So, I mean, you talk about a day-to-day balancing act for a manager who would like to keep this team in the chase, but is mindful of what the overarching goal is. The guy's competitive as there is, wanting to win every single game, but he's looking at his group of players, and he knows it's on him to make sure that these guys become the best versions of themselves. And that's his job and the job of the field staff to make that happen.
Yeah, and that brings us to kind of the crux of everything, as I said in the intro, is what would you rather – I think we both know financially what a player would prefer, but what do you think about development-wise and maximizing talent? For some of these players – what's better, Jeff? Is it doing the, I'm going to channel my inner Mark Cohen here. Is it playing in Memphis, walking to Memphis, or is it sitting in St. Louis? You know, what's best for some of these guys? For example, Victor Scott, he's had a quote unquote phenomenal spring. You could put him on the short list of the most impressive players of spring training, right there alongside, say, Matthew Liberatore, Michael McGreevy, a Lucan Baker. I mean, like these, I'm listening to some of the young players, Lars Nootbaar, you already mentioned. So these are some of the guys who have been the most impressive of spring. And he's right there. And yet, as our colleague Lynn Worthy put it pretty well, he might be playing too good to be on the bench. So there he is, you know, a few feet off Beale Street playing in Memphis as opposed to sitting in St. Louis. Where do you stand with this?
Yeah, you know, to use a hockey analogy, you know, you want a guy to reach his full potential. You want, sometimes you leave a guy in the minors on a scoring line, on a power play, playing big minutes versus bringing him in and playing him on the fourth line where his ceiling may settle at a lower level than it should. You want guys, everybody reaching their ceiling. And every case is different. You know, like a Lucan Baker's done his time. He is who he is. He's improved his bat speed, but he's not a prospect anymore in a sense. He's an older guy. He's raked at the AAA level. He's developed pretty close to what you're going to get. Scott has a chance to be a star. So And so when a guy's a chance to be a star, I see nothing wrong with seeing if he can go dominate at AAA. You know, just go down and dominate and then make it hard for us. And I think that could happen. And I think, you know, we look, go back a year, he had a great spring, but then circumstances kind of rushed him into a situation and he the traction was quickly lost. And then he had to kind of go back and start over. So he seems right there, but I think there would be value, and it just helps the team as well to see if he can go dominate, you know, and it helps the team in its short-term decision-making. You know, if Nolan Arenado gets traded in June, then that opens up a spot for somebody to pop up into the mix, and it could well be him. But I don't see any problem with having him try to dominate a Triple A just for a bit to see if – then he knows he can translate that more readily to the big leagues.
Hey, but is that incongruous to the message? You know, I mean, they've spent all year talking about opportunity, go young, go young, turn young, go with the youth, let's see the youth movement, all the things that they've said. And then he goes out and has just a rip-roaring, superb spring. I mean, you could make the argument that he has been the best player for them in spring. And so what type of message does that send if he's not in St. Louis and you take someone who hasn't had all that good a spring?
Yeah, you know, count me. I've been doing this for so long. And one of the things I am a grumpy old man about is people are competing for jobs in the spring. Usually they're not. Usually the franchise knows what it's going to do right ahead of time. And unless somebody gets hurt, they have a pretty good idea.
Yeah, the contracts tell us. Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I'm like, yeah, great. You had a great spring. But there, again, you know, earning your way up the ladder until you've dominated the top level of the minors, it's hard to make the case. And it just is. And if a player has an adverse reaction to it, then he may have the wrong player too, right? Because he should be go down there and I want to rake. And I want to, and if I get into a game where the other team's not very good and I got a chance to really put it on, I'm going to put it on. I'm going to make it bad. So when I come up, this is a kid with some swagger. I mean, you want this kid keeping that. And if he has to just torment some AAA pitching for a while and then come back up with that same swagger, I'm okay with that as an old school guy. Now, I know athletes today, I understand the pride of being sent back and what that looks like. You know, they tried to keep him engaged last year, even when, you know, he was going through that period of trying to get his game back. They tried to make sure, reminding him that he was still a big part of their future. So he's an interesting guy because he just looks like a player, carries himself like a player, has all these tools. He has a great spring. He could be a star if the team doesn't blow it. Now, could they blow it by breaking his heart, by sending him down? Boy, I'd hate to think that's how he'd react.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think he will. I mean, he's not that style of player. He's also, he's very, you know, he's Victor Scott is, he takes very detailed notes. Like, he's constantly taking notes. One of the descriptions, they were talking to him about some of the things to do in his game and where he could improve. And he, you know, started making like a to-do list as to what to do. You know, he poured himself into studying hitters that he could emulate, right? Like Brett Butler, which I thought was very funny and, you know, but also very fitting, right? Like, that's not a name you hear kicked around in the launch angle era, right? But there it was, like Rod Carew and some of these other guys who, look, that's their game, and that's what he wants to be. And, you know, I think a real fascinating question that I asked last year of a Cardinals executive was what levels of on-base percentage does he need to get to, A, be a starter, to B, be a all-star, and C, to be a superstar? Like, with his speed, you know, as one of his teammates said, like, you know, if you get Vic on base, it's a double, maybe a triple. And, you start adding that up, like you start thinking about those 90 feet in terms of like slugging percentage, not stolen bases. I mean, that makes him a really impact player. But how often does he have to get on base to do that, is, you know, to really like shine as an impact player or even standout or star player? Because we know Billy Hamilton never got there, right? Billy Hamilton didn't get, he made too many outs. Now you look back and you go, well, Juan Pierre was very impressive, right? But how would that game play in today's age? So if Victor Scott can be that kind of player with steals but more walks, oof, that's a really impact talent. And we haven't even started about the fact that he's improved defensively. I mean, he and Michael Ciani, I mean, they're really superb racing towards elite center fielders.
Well, and you look at, you know, where he's been, what he's been able to accomplish and where he's working to improve. Better routes in the outfield, better use mm-hmm. of his speed. We'll look at him on the bases, wanting to have the same confidence at the big league level that he's had in the minors where he was almost unstoppable. But yeah. the big leagues are a different issue. The way learning the pitchers, watching how teams go about trying to contain the run game. There were steps for him to take, and he's worked to take those steps. So, you know, can you tell him to hold on just for a little longer and go down and do it? Just go down and kill it for a month, and then you're back. Make it hard on us. You could. I want to see some things. I would still do it. You know, I kind of mm-hmm. hate to be that guy because I love the guy. I mean, I love watching this guy play. I think he's the kind of guy. When you talk about players who are going to energize the fan base going forward, making the team yeah. more athletic, as Ollie says, being more like the Brewers, very dynamic young team, very athletic. Oh, he's going to be front and center in that, right? And yeah. so, and this is a guy you could sell to the fan base because he's going to have personality the way he goes about his job. So, yeah, this is a hard one, man. You throw out difficult questions.
I do it professionally. There. I think, you know, there are kind of three tiers here, right? And or three silos, if you will, right? There's Lucan Baker, who is going to make the team as a right-handed bat off the bench, sometimes DH. He's had a very strong spring, looks really good at the plate, has just been thunderous there. And they got a role for him. It's a part-time role, but that's what they want him to be. And he would be, goodness, what would he be? The third, fourth, first baseman off the bench, right? I mean, Wilson Contreras is the starter. Alec Burleson is going to be the sometime starter. It's hard to say that they wouldn't put Herrera there next just to have his bat in the lineup, right? And he plays first base enough, so Pa has to be behind the plate. So it's kind of rare for a team to carry four guys who play first base, but hey, the DH is in the National League. We're way removed from NL rules, so it works, but it's still going to be a part-time role. And then you have, as we've discussed on the other end, the Victor Scott, the second kind of situation where the team seems to be headed towards, and we'll see because injuries or availability is going to influence this as well, and trades possibly, you know, down the road. But Victor Scott, you know, they'd rather have playing every day, you know, zooming his way up and not sitting in the minor or in the majors or even like as a part of the good hands team coming in for late innings in the majors. There's one playing constantly. And then in the middle, you got the situation at utility where Jose Fermin has had a really good spring, but isn't a guy who they'd turn to play a week at shortstop or 10 days or 14 days at shortstop if Mason Wynn is, you know, down or injured. They would then likely turn to Jose Barrero, a newcomer to the team on a minor league deal. But it, you know, as they have it set up now, Barrera would be like kind of the priority starter, playing every day, being ready to go in Memphis, you know, because his contract is set up that way. If he comes to the majors, they risk losing him because he's out of options. If he's in the minors, they only risk losing him if he opts out and says, I would like to seek a better opportunity elsewhere because I could be in the majors. But they can keep him playing, and if they need a long-term shortstop, then he's there. Meanwhile, they have a guy who's more contact oriented, doesn't play shortstop as well or center field as well as Burrow, because who's been really superb and athletic defensively. But they have a guy who can give them more off the bench at the plate, more contact, and play enough positions to make it viable. So you have these three kind of outcomes for these young players, which I find super interesting. And then, or super, I don't know if interesting, super illustrative of how team building takes place. Roster, age, ceiling, role, these are all factors. Which brings us to, Jeff, Michael McGreevy. Where are you on Michael McGreevy? Had a strong finish to last year, left a tremendous impression in his three starts with the Major League team, and has only built off of that. I think it'd be fascinating if this were, what, I don't know, 15 years ago, Dave Duncan would be pounding a table for this sinker baller. He would be in the rotation, man. This guy would be beloved by Dave Duncan and that crew. And they're like, let the defense work. But where's best for him? Is it in a six-man rotation? Is it in the Memphis rotation? Is it in the Cardinals five-man rotation?
Yeah, I think the six-man rotation, while generally not a huge priority early in the season to get there, but more teams are going to go to it opening the season anyways. The world is changing. That may be the out because he certainly has checked all the boxes. He, you know, he really he's come a long way. He couldn't have been more impressive in a short time with the club. The way he goes about his work, the way he's tried to make improvements, the way he has made improvements, his maturity level, all those things. You can certainly argue, as I did for Scott, that you know it would not hurt for him to go down and make five starts in the major in the minors and the rotation down there, depending on your needs here, particularly early in the season when you may not need a six-man rotation as much. And you, the tangent there is also, where are you with Matthew Liberatore? Is he a guy that you want to have in that six starter spot if that, or does he go back to the bullpen? So it's kind of a tangent question. You know, fascinating, right? He's going to get starts this year. He's going to be their best rookie. He's going to be in the, he's going to get starts. Question is it, is it 10? Is it 15? Is it 21? Is it 26? Where do you get with Michael? I mean, how many? But he is going to, he is part of it for sure. The one beauty of being a pitcher is you know that it's a constantly fluid situation. That whereas the team, it's going to take an injury of some significance to a position player to really jostle the roster. The pitchers, things happen, and there's more likely to be some fluidity to that.
Yeah, and they have the roster set up with a lot of options to have, you know, flowing back and forth. I mean, I think you're going to see Rodri Munoz at some point in time in a prominent role. Kyle Leahy is another guy who, you know, you could see where he would fit in at certain time. Gordon Graceffo still yet to make some noise, and he'll have a factor in this season, however it goes. You know, all these things are true, and it's just really interesting that you could really distill this, you know, sitting in St. Louis versus playing in Memphis down to McGreevy and Victor Scott. Where are they better served? And how different it is for a pitcher than for a position player. You know, Marmol has said that for him, McGreevy's a starter. He wants McGreevy to stay a starter. That's how they want to use him. That's how they want to prepare him. In some ways, you know, it's similar with Victor Scott, right? He's a starter. They want to use him as a starter. They want to see him as a starter. They want to keep him a starter. The whole question is when you have a guy who plays one position in the majors and there's only one position in the lineup for that, how different that equation is then versus a guy who they have five spots or six spots for in the majors. So, I mean, it's contract, it's math, it's age, it's all the things that we've outlined. But, you know, I mean, the only guarantee is that somebody will be unhappy and that in hindsight, there will be a whole lot of questioning if it doesn't work.
Yeah, I would say one thing, it's hard to tell players to be patient and such, but
yeah.
Well, I watch some teams and how they just have stockpiled a lot of guys and they leave themselves tough decisions going through a season. On a lesser level of in terms of competitive level, the Reds gathered up a lot of guys. And, you know, just okay, how are they going to sort that? And the Dodgers have always had a lot of guys, and they've had guys and all over the interchangeable, and Tommy Edman fits right into that. Where guys' roles can change a lot during the course of the season. Things can fluctuate, but they trust that they have a lot of guys and they'll make good use of them. You know, so I think all the guys you're talking about are going to have a role. And it would be easier, again, going back to the Arenado question, if the Yankees, who were said to be interested in upgrading at third base, would just go ahead and do it. But then there's a spot. You know, then Scott's in center field, Nootbaar moves over, Donovan plays second, Gorman moves over. You move on. Then, you know, if Arenado got traded tomorrow, I think Scott opens the year in center field for the Cardinals.
Yeah. How about that? He would be the back-to-back opening day starter in center field. Be fascinating, you know.
But, you know, who do you tell him? It's like, hey, just wait for us to trade Nolan. Hang tight. You keep your cell phone on. And it may be a while, but.
Yeah. Well, what we know is there are a few people who could get to St. Louis faster than him. We do know that. All right, Jeff, let's close here. I want to ask you, as spring ends and the Cardinals make their way north towards St. Louis, you know, the sense around ownership for many, many years has been that the Cardinal fans would not be receptive to a rebuild, that they could not, quote unquote, I was once told, quote unquote, they could not stomach a rebuild. Is this fan base any more receptive to what's ahead than maybe the team has historically thought it would be? Is it going to take, you know, a whole lot of energy and new bells and whistles at the ballpark to say, hey, come spend a night at the ball, you know, at Busch Stadium? But can't guarantee that, you know, the winning will be the most exciting part, but maybe you'll enjoy the atmosphere. What is this fan base ready for this?
Yeah, your hope, if you're the owner, is your best hope is always in these scenarios is you somehow sell the future. And it would help if the guys who are you're counting on to become that energy, that marketable commodity, that performer can do it sooner than later. You know, I mean, Mason Wynn's already the face of the franchise at his age, right? He's what they're going to build around. But are there, can Jordan Walker be that guy? Can Victor Scott II be that guy? Weatherholt down the road be that guy? Can, you know, Pallante, he's a kind of a dynamic presence. Can he be a guy that convinces fans that, okay, this team's going to be fun to watch? Besides the commitment to winning, Derek, that you had the issue with fans, they want to see a team that's got some energy and so has a dynamic playing style. So if Ollie Marmol can get this team in motion, can play more aggressively on offense, can unleash some more, if there is going to be more athleticism, if some of these guys are the players that they hope they will be by midseason anyways, that you could see a team that just plays a different way, mm-hmm. and has some potential mm-hmm. to be better, I think mm-hmm. that's what your hope is. Otherwise, yeah, at those concession prices, parking and such, by midsummer, could be tough, Derek.
Yeah, I'm not sure what style of play will capture the imagination of Cardinal fans, but I'm open to that possibility. I do think, Jeff, it's interesting what's been an emphasis of spring. And one of the things that the coaching staff talked about this winter and even made some additions like John Jay, who fans know well, right? But and know what he brings well, but like his addition was part of this, was this idea that they wanted to be more themselves in the clubhouse. They wanted to foster this notion that you can bring out your personality. It doesn't have to be a stoic clubhouse. It doesn't have to be, you know, a sepia toned, you know, holding up the Cardinal brand, stodgy, whatever you want to look at. It doesn't have to be that way because, hey, this is new. So be yourself, be new. We've seen this in different ways. You know, we've certainly written about, you know, say Colton Wong, remember taking the speaker out for BP and how that was different than the previous year when there was kind of like this buttoned up, almost Wall Street feel. Certainly, or maybe even like football program feel to the team. You know, if they continue this notion, like, all right, look, just find yourself, be yourself, and see how that does for you as a player, you're going to see some monster bat flips on walks from Wilson Contreras. You're going to see some players like Lars Nootbaar, and we'll see. Brendan Donovan's more reserved. But you're probably going to see it from Mason Wynn. You might see it from Jordan Walker. You will certainly see it from Nolan Arenado. You know, a lot more of this like exuberance and sort of manifest competitive, almost volcanic competitiveness, if you can. And also like whimsy. Like, look, you know, Alec Burleson the other day made a dig on a double play and he stood there and held it like for applause. Like, I'm not even kidding. He held it there as if to make, like, stood at the base. The ump had long called the guy out, but Burleson knew that the whole play had been so good that he waited for applause, almost like a stand-up comedian who had just delivered the zinger that was going to be slow build into an uproarious laugh. That's what it looked like. I mean, if they play to the crowd, maybe that's a style that does capture the imagination. But I'll also add this, Jen, that's kind of where I'm going, is maybe they do start selling the individuals, right? as opposed to the laundry. You know, maybe the, you know, maybe that's where this season kind of develops, is instead of saying, hey, look, you're a Cardinal and you're wearing the same logo as all these great Cardinals before you. Maybe it's like, no, you're this player and we're going to see what kind of star you become. And you're also wearing this logo.
Well, that's a great point. Can you make that transition? Because this is going to be a younger nucleus. People having fun, exuberance, aggression. I think fans in a long slog of a season, if a team has personality and if the team has players that that fans like, and, you know, we're not saying go all bananas out there and just constantly do everything slapstick for the crowd, but as popular as that style is for a one game exhibition, you know, I think there's something to that, because the team, if a team looks stale right now, the organization has a sense of like the organization got stale, but if the team gets stale, boy, that's deadly as a product, because it's baseball, man. And you know, it's a long year and the games can get long. If the guys are having fun, if they're out taking, diving around, taking a base, you know, pushing it, fans can see that they're out there, see the compete level. Man, it goes a long way, Derek.
Which brings us back to the beginning of what we talked about, Jeff. Maybe the lesson here is, if the Cardinals think that the Savannah Bananas are going to get the biggest crowd at Busch Stadium, maybe take a lesson from that and go, well, at least be entertaining.
There you go. Because you know what? You know, you can only discount the tickets so much. People still have to make the effort to go down there, and they still have to feel good going into the ballpark. And man, it has to be fun, right? And look, this team's got some guys that could definitely not only play but have fun doing it. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Alec Burleson. You mentioned Mason Wynn. There are more on this in this group. We mentioned
Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, it's just the guy's personality is infectious. If people feed off that, he has a presence. Fans respond to that.
Very
interesting. No offense to Paul Goldschmidt, who's a pro's pro and a you know, potential Hall of Famer, but you know, fans do like the excitable guy as well.
Yeah. And then they trade Nolan Arenado and all of a sudden the heart gets pulled from this team.
Yeah, well, but you got some guys who are, you know, two guys from the Dominican League and a guy who's killing it in Double A, and then there's, you know, yeah.
So I don't know. That'll be if they do that, and if they do it while they're playing well, and the reaction of the players who are energized or feed off of Nolan Arenado, that'll be a whole other thing. So, but all right, well, we'll see. I mean, what we know for sure is it won't lack for activity at the ballpark. We don't know how many wins or how much enthusiasm or how many tickets, but we do know it won't lack for things to write about, Jeff. And I look forward to seeing you there. I'm started packing, so that's a sure sign of the voyage north. I got a pit stop in Memphis to swing through St. Louis and then head to Memphis and then yo-yo back. So basically I'm being optioned out and then recalled right away due to injury. So I get to live the life of one of these relievers in the coming week.
Yeah. You and Chris Roycroft can share your tales of Interstate 55 with your favorite stops.
Yeah. I'll be able to relate to the guys as they seesaw back and forth. I'll be like, yeah, I did the same thing that first week of the season. So, all right. Looking forward to seeing you in St. Louis, Jeff. Thank you very much for joining me. That is, of course, St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist and author of Tip Sheet at EscaleoToday.com, Jeff Gordon. He's kind enough to join me regularly here on the best podcast in baseball. You can find all of his coverage and all of the Constant Cardinals coverage at STLtoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch coming Sunday. This weekend, that is the weekend of the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, coming to your newsstands, there will be the 2025 St. Louis Cardinals and Major League Baseball season preview. This is, of course, our annual award-winning special section that we put together with all of the breakdowns position by position of the Cardinals done by my colleague Daniel Guerrero this year. Plus, it has a Q&A between me and Mosaic that was interesting to do for sure. You know, there was some back and forth for sure during it. And then my cover story, along with a cover photo of Mason Wynn, as well as Benjamin Hockman and Lynn Worthy providing columns. Look for it there on your newsstands this weekend. That, of course, is March 23rd. All those stories also available online. The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review. Please subscribe. Subscriptions make the sponsorships possible. Sponsorships makes the podcast possible. And your reviews are essential to continuing the best podcast in baseball. So tell us what you think, especially whether or not you'd rather be playing in St. Louis. No, wait, I got it wrong. Oh, all right. You know what? It's spring training for me too, Jeff. Whether you'd rather be playing in Memphis or sitting in St. Louis.
There you go.
Yeah, I nailed it. Nailed it there at the end. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, man.
All right, I'll do better next week. Ha ha ha.